at him.
Who?
Lowering her voice still further, April said,
Len Kinski, the public relations director.
Roberto had nothing to do. Al-Bashir had gone back to Africa or someplace, leaving Roberto with instructions to sit tight in Houston and pump his contacts inside Astro Corporation for information about Randolph's plans to fly his backup spaceplane. But the contacts had run dry. They all claimed that Randolph wasn't telling anyone about his plans. Other than a quick trip to Venezuela several weeks ago, nobody seemed to know anything about what Randolph would do next. Not even his public relations guy had a clue, or so he claimed. Then came Hurricane Fernando, and everything was put on hold for a few days while they rode out the storm and cleaned up after it. Now Roberto sat in his modest apartment and waited for one of his contacts to phone him. He hated to wait. I could be out cruising downtown, he told himself. What good's the money I'm making if I gotta sit here like a punk in a holding tank and wait for some damn pendejo to phone me? I should have given him my cell number. So he remained in the apartment, sitting in the reclining chair in front of the TV for hours on end, getting up only to trudge to the refrigerator for another can of beer, or to the bathroom to relieve himself. His anger smoldered, simmering hotter with each passing hour. If I go out, somebody'll call and I'll miss it. He won't talk on the answering machine, so I gotta wait here like a fucking moron. Roberto was asleep in the recliner when the phone rang. Instantly awake, he grabbed it and growled, Yeah? You told me to call, said the contact's voice. So what you got to tell me? Nothing new. Nothing? What do you mean, nothing? They got a booster back up on the launch pad and they're going to put the space plane on it. That's something, ain't it? It's what they were going to do before the hurricane. When they gonna launch it? The man's voice hesitated. This isn't for a launch. They don't have the government's approval for a flight. They're just checking out the connections, making sure the space plane and the booster fit together okay. And then what? They'll take him down, I guess. You get paid to do more and guess, man. Randolph's keeping his cards close to his vest. Nobody knows what he's planning to do next. Somebody's gotta know. Well, yeah. The chief engineer must know, Van Buren. But she's not talking to anybody. She ain't talking to you, is what you mean. She's not talking to anybody. I'm telling you, nobody knows what's coming up next. The whole fucking company could collapse. Randolph could declare bankruptcy and we'll all be out on our asses. Roberto was not an engineer, nor a technician, nor even a high school graduate, but he had the dogged capacity to pursue a course stubbornly and not be deterred by any excuses. Listen to me, he said slowly. If that engineer knows what's going down, then he's the one you gotta pump. Whatever. You find out from her what Randolph's gonna do. She won't talk to me about it. I've tried and she shuts up like a clam. Roberto thought that he could open up a clam, no problem. But he kept his patience and asked,
You mean there's nobody else in the whole fucking company knows what Randolph's gonna do?
A long hesitation. Then the man said, Maybe his secretary. She makes all his appointments and stuff.
Lean on her.
I don't know about that.
You lean on her, man, or I'll come down there and do it for you.
Hey, you don't have to do that.
Then you do your job. I'm not getting paid enough for this. You're getting paid plenty. Now earn it.
Roberto slammed the phone down. Fucking jerk off. On Matagorda Island, Len Kinski heard the phone connection click dead. He felt cold and clammy, and realized he was sweating. If only I can get April to come to New York with me, he thought. Maybe I could get her to tell me what I need to know about Dan's plans. Of one thing, Kinski was certain. Mating the space plane to a booster was no test. Dan was planning to fly the bird. When, where, and how, those were the questions Kinski needed to find answers for. He knew Roberto would not wait long, and the last thing he wanted was a visit from that Neanderthal. Matagorda Island, Texas. Dan craned his neck, looking up at the clean, lean line of the gleaming white booster and the graceful, silvery, swept-wing spaceplane perched atop it, its needle nose pointed into the bright morning sky. The weather had turned friendly. Blue sky dotted with fat puffs of white cumulus clouds sailing sedately on the breeze coming in from the gulf. He could smell the tang of the sea and the sweet odor of the distant pines. You'd never know a hurricane had blown past here a couple of days ago, Dan thought. The launch pad had been cleaned of the scrub and debris that had littered the area in the aftermath of the storm. The puddles and outright ponds of rainwater had either been pumped dry or evaporated in the sunshine. To Dan's happy relief, all of Astro's buildings had survived Fernando with only minor damage. His Jaguar had suffered the most. Its 10-year-old fabric top had ripped off in the storm, and the car's interior looked like a swimming pool when he went out to check on it. Could have been a lot worse, he said to himself as he slowly walked around the perimeter of the launch platform, admiring the booster and spaceplane combination. The gantry structure had been rolled away from the platform. Only the umbilical tower stood beside the booster, with a pair of heavy electrical cables running from it to hatches in the top of the booster and just below the wing root of the spaceplane. "You look happy, Chief," said Lynn Van Buren, pacing along beside him. Like Dan, she wore a hard hat with her name stenciled on it just below the stylish Astro Corporation logo. "Rockets on the pad and all systems check, from what you told me," Dan replied. "Why shouldn't I be happy?"
"What do we do now?" she asked.
Dan leaned his back against the sturdy steel railing of the platform and gazed up again at the spaceplane, thinking, "She's built to fly. She shouldn't be sitting here on the ground. She ought to be up in the sky where she belongs." "All the checkouts complete?" he asked Van Buren.
"Aye, up.
All the connectors are mated and all systems are functioning. Batteries and fuel cells fully charged." Dan looked into the engineer's hazel eyes. She seemed amused, expectant, as if the two of them were playing a game and she knew what his next move would be. "Is the plane fueled up?" he asked. A hint of a smile curved her lips slightly.
"No, sir.
The mating test is done with the upper stage empty." He saw in her face that she was thinking, "You know that, Chief." Dan played the game, too. He looked around the platform, down to the ground where a trio of technicians were fussing with an auxiliary generator, out to the blockhouse where the launch crew directed tests and launches, then back to Van Buren's anticipant expression. "I want a full-up test," he said. "A full propellant load in the spaceplane, just as if we were going to launch. But we don't have any LOX or liquid hydrogen. The facility blew up, remember?" Lowering his voice, Dan told her, "There's a truck convoy on its way here with enough LOX and H2 to fill the bird's tanks. They'll arrive tonight after most of the workforce has gone home." Van Buren looked only slightly surprised. She asked,
"So we fuel her up tonight?"
"Yep, with a minimum work crew." The engineer nodded.
"And then what?"
He grinned at her. "And then you and your top 5 people take a little trip to Venezuela." Her eyes went wide.
"Venezuela?"
"Gotcha," said Dan. Claude Passeau was in the office that Dan had loaned him in the engineering building that flanked Hangar A. Dan popped his head past the office's open doorway and asked cheerily, "Want to go to lunch?" Passeau was busily tapping at his computer keyboard. Without looking up from the screen, he said, "It's not quite 11 a.m. "I know," Dan said, stepping fully into the tidy little office. Dan had given the FAA administrator a corner office with 2 windows, and Passeau kept it as neat as if it were his permanent residence. The other FAA and NTSB people got claustrophobic cubicles with shoulder-high partitions and barely enough room for a desk and a wastebasket. Sitting in the hard plastic chair in front of Passeau's desk, Dan said, "I thought I'd tootle over to Lamar for some local frog's legs." Passeau looked up from the keyboard.
"Frog's legs? Really?"
"The size of drumsticks," said Dan. Passeau stifled a laugh when they walked out onto the parking lot and he saw the rusted, dented old Chevrolet 2-door hatchback sitting in Dan's space. "It belongs to the guy who's fixing my ragtop," Dan explained crossly. "The only loaner he had," he claimed. Passeau shook his head. How the mighty have fallen. Dan shrugged apologetically.